Howdy, regulars. This is Regular Dispatch 88. It's August 31st, 2020. From the beginning, Gary Shandling was one of my favorite comedians. I used to watch him religiously when he was the guest host on The Tonight Show in the 70s. And he was basically an unknown comedian filling in for the legendary Johnny Carson. He slaughtered every time. Unlike most of my high school interviews, this one was conducted over the phone. Gary was in a hotel room at Lake Tahoe, preparing for a show that night, but he took the time to talk to me, and in the process, to lay out every single thing he intended to do in the rest of his career. All these years later, I look at it and think, everything the guy said he would do, he did. The lesson here, for me, was that you have to have a dream before you can execute it. That the people who succeed are the ones who think through what the next stages of their careers might be, and then work incredibly hard, day after day, to attain their goals. They don't just flop around it like fish. They have a vision, and they work their asses off to make it a reality. Judd Apatow. So you guest hosted The Tonight Show recently. That's a pretty big step up. It was the talk of the town. How did that come about? Gary Shandling. I think I had done the show 11 times, and I had done well, fortunately, just about every time. What happened was that Albert Brooks was supposed to guest host, but he got sick the day before, and so they called me 24 hours ahead when the show was being taped and said, we'd like you to guest host tomorrow night. I had 24 hours to prepare. Really? Yeah. I mean, it was weird. It was very weird. But the Tonight Show has always been supportive of me, and they said if the opportunity ever arose, I could be used as a guest host. But you really don't believe it until it happens. So I knew the opportunity existed, but I didn't think it was going to happen that fast. What kind of preparation would you do for the show? I mean, you're interviewing people, which is new to you. Plus, you have to have a 10-minute monologue okayed. How did you go about preparing all that? It was interesting because I hadn't worked in about 12 days, which is a long time for a comic to go without working, because you don't keep your chops up on the stage otherwise. So I assembled a monologue of material I had done before. There was nothing else to do. And I went out to two clubs that night, tried to figure out what I wanted to do for my monologue, and just try to get my feet back on the stage, because I hadn't worked in 2 weeks. And when you watched it, were you happy? Pretty much. I mean, it's hard for me to look at it and be objective. I can't see it. But it seemed like it went well for my first time. I don't think it was, like, amazing or anything. Did you see it? No, I didn't. I was doing interviews that night at the Improv. But you must have been scared to death, right? Well, I wasn't real scared because I had mentally prepared for doing that all along. I mean, The Tonight Show had been so supportive of me. They made me feel comfortable. Rather than putting me under pressure, they simply said, we think you're the guy for this, and we don't have any question that you can do a good job. That kind of support made me feel comfortable instead of frightened. There were certainly nerves. What kind of feedback did you get? Did you get offers afterwards? My manager doesn't tell me about all the offers, but I did get requests to do what we call personal appearance work, which is in clubs and stuff, and I guess there were some sitcom offers, but I'm just not that interested in that. Acting is something you're not interested in doing? I'm interested in acting, I just don't know in what vehicle yet. My immediate goal is to sell a show and get it on the air, a talk variety show. Something like The Tonight Show, I guess, or David Letterman. I would like to do something more than a situation comedy. And I have a show in my mind that we're actually going to pitch to the networks when I get back off the road, which will be the end of October. The Tonight Show is taking a major chance with you because you're not really in the public eye. It's a big chance to put someone like you on there as far as ratings go. Someone turns the TV on and sees you behind the desk. They were smart. Ratings-wise, they know I'm not going to get any ratings, but they were smart because they slipped me in when Albert Brooks had dropped out. The night before, they didn't even mention that I was going to be guest hosting, so everybody who tuned in assumed it was Albert Brooks. And then I'm sure out of curiosity, they watched for a while. I think in their minds, they were taking a risk putting me in there, but I had pretty much proven that I was strong and in control of what I do. I think they felt that I could do it, and I think they were more than satisfied with how I did. It was exciting. It was very emotional. So you're working bigger rooms these days. You're in Tahoe right now, right? I'm in Tahoe, opening for Tony Orlando, but I've been doing big rooms for about 2 years. And how does that compare to, you know, playing clubs in Los Angeles? It's very different. For one thing, it depends who you're opening for and what kind of crowd they draw. Sometimes in these big rooms like Reno or Tahoe or Vegas, they draw an older audience that's totally unlike what you find in a comedy club, which is generally younger and a little hipper. So you work it differently. You have to work it in a broader, more commercial way. I have to take out most of my hip material. And some of my singles material has to go because it's been so long, some of these people have been single, they just don't relate to it. How would you describe your type of humor? Oh man, I can't see it objectively. And this is Judd again. It's not that conventional. It's ideas and thoughts with observation. Some comedians now, they're just doing straight observational humor, but your act has a whole new dimension to it. You should tell me what you think it is, because I'm always curious how people see it from the outside. That's how I see it from the outside, you know? It's like your ideas on things, and I think it's great, just... Gary, the most important thing a comic can do is write from his insides. As cliche as that sounds, a lot of comics start out thinking they just should write something funny, which is not the answer. You have to write from personal experience. What you see on the stage is really how I am when I'm funny. Like with your friends? I can't see how it's different. All I know is when I watch, I go, yep, that's Gary. I write about my life, and then I exaggerate it because I do like to write jokes. You know, I was a comedy writer before I was a comedian. Who did you write for? I wrote for Sanford and Son, Welcome Back, Kotter, and The Harvey Korman Show. I wrote for about 6 sitcoms before I decided to do stand-up. So I have an ability to write jokes, which I like to do. Every now and then, I'll be writing about my life, and I'll just think about a joke, and it's really just purely a joke. What would be an example of how a piece of material developed? I'll tell you an interesting story. I mean, this is unlike other material of mine. I do this joke in my act. I say, I have heard every excuse for a woman not to go to bed with me. I think I've heard them all. I remember this one girl actually said to me, look, not with this Falkland Islands thing. Judd laughs, as did I, at Gary. And I said, that was over a year ago. And she said, I still haven't gotten over it yet. And I said, well, I can understand that, Mrs. Thatcher. And Judd is apparently laughing like I am. Gary, I could tell you about the derivation of so many jokes, because some of them take a year, literally, from the time I get an idea to the time I get the line exactly right. With the Falkland Islands joke, I originally wrote a joke where I would come out and say, boy, I'm just not meeting any women. I don't know if it's this Falkland Islands thing or what. And then as time went by, I changed it to, I've heard every excuse for a woman not going to bed with me. I remember this one girl said, not with this Falkland Islands thing, which is a little more hip and gets a laugh. And I was telling David Brenner that joke, and he said, at that point, you ought to say, that was over a year ago, because that's funnier. And then I added, well, she still hasn't gotten over it yet. The Thatcher line came later, so it's just kind of kept going, you know. Judd, can you tell me about another one? Gary, okay, there's one I'm working on now. I actually did this joke on The Tonight Show, but in a different way. It's just a stupid joke, really. But I said, I went to a health food store recently, and I've been taking bee pollen, bumblebee pollen. It's supposed to increase your lovemaking stamina. So I've been taking about 2,000 milligrams of bee pollen a day. And the other night, I woke up in the middle of the night and started to fling myself against the screen door. Judd laughs. Gary, and I started to shout, someone turn off the porch light. And it's interesting because I didn't know yet how this joke is ultimately going to evolve. I actually did this joke on The Tonight Show where I just said, I took 2,000 milligrams of bee pollen and I'm afraid that when I make love, I'm going to die right afterward. Judd, yeah, because that's what bees do. And then I said, or I'll wake up the next morning and I'll be flinging myself against the screen door. And then I added the part about turn off the porch light, which I think paints the picture of what bees do, which is go for the light, you know. Judd, that's really great. When did all this begin, this interest in comedy? When I was a kid, I had a total interest in comedians when I was 10 years old. Who were the comedians that you idolized? Woody Allen is my idol, period. I think he's as funny as you can get. Others, I like a lot of people. Mort Saul, he's hip and funny. Dick Shawn, Johnny Carson. I think he's underrated in a way. I think he's a really funny man. Did you ever see Woody Allen work live in a club? Gary, no, I grew up in Tucson, Arizona, where there's just nothing. I'd only seen comedians on TV. But my folks started going to Vegas when I was like 13, 14, 15. And I saw Joey Bishop and people like that there. And I actually remember knowing some of his jokes before he delivered them and thinking, oh man, he's doing old jokes. So it was always an instinct for me. But to answer your question there, I didn't see a real comedian in a club until I was like 20. I went to see George Carlin, who I'm just a major fan of. Who isn't? Said Judd. Gary. And it's a really wonderful story. The first time I ever wrote any comedy material, I was 19. George Carlin was working in a club in Phoenix. This is when he had just let his hair grow long, and he was starting to do honest material about his life and stuff. And I met him, and I asked him to read my material and to tell me what he thought. And he read my material. He was so supportive. He said, I don't buy material. I write all my own material. But he gave me a lot of feedback and encouragement. Then 10 years later, I met George again and was able to thank him for that moment. He's a wonderful guy. What kind of background did you have that you could just write this stuff? I was an electrical engineering major, if you can believe that. And then I switched to marketing, and then I switched to creative writing. I finally got a degree in business, and I went to graduate school for 1 year and just took writing classes. I'd always been a pretty good writer. It's just one of those things I can sit down and fill a page pretty easily. And so I moved to LA, and I didn't know exactly what direction I was going to take. And I met a guy who said, well, try writing a script and see what happens. I wrote a script for All in the Family that they didn't buy. But someone else saw it and said, wow, you have a lot of potential, and they helped me along. Then I wrote a script for Sanford and Sons, and they loved it and started giving me work. It all went pretty fast, and I got pretty hot as a writer. People start to say, what would you like to write? What kind of show would you like to create? Yeah, says Judd and Gary. But then I was sitting at the typewriter one day and realized that this was not what I wanted to do the rest of my life. And so when I was 28, I sort of had a midlife crisis, you know. 28 in midlife is midlife for a Jewish guy. And I said, if I don't stop now and start doing stand-up. So I went to some real dive clubs, but it's real hard getting on stage when no one knew who I was. Were there audition nights? Yeah, I went to audition nights. I was working in discos and health food restaurants. It was bizarre. Judd says, Jerry Seinfeld, when I interviewed him, said that he did a disco and no one even knew he was performing. Gary, I'm sure we've all had the same experiences. I worked a health food restaurant for about 4 months where people would just come in. There would be 6 people eating rice and vegetables, and I would do 40 minutes. Only in Hollywood, I guess, says Judd. Gary, when you're first starting, it's just important to be on the stage. It doesn't matter if people respond, because you have to get over your stage fright. Was The Tonight Show the big break as far as stand-up goes? Yeah. They like me, and they're supportive of me, and they know that I work hard at what I do. I try to get better all the time, and I still don't think I'm near my potential. You feel you have ways to go? Yeah, I don't think the things I'm doing on the stage now are what I'll be doing 5 years from now. What will you be doing? I hope it'll be even more honest than it is now, more personal, because it takes time for people to get to know you. I mean, Richard Pryor is the perfect example. If you look at what he was doing 10 or 15 years ago, it's different than what he does now because we know him. He can just get up and start talking about his life, and that's the funniest stuff. What are your long-range goals? Well, first of all, my long-range goal is to be funnier. It really is. And to get better. And to keep digging inside myself. Number two, I guess, is to find the right vehicle, either on television or film, that'll allow me to be funny in the way that I'm funny, you know? Judd, well, thank you very much. Gary, I'm sorry I wasn't funny this morning. Judd, this show is pretty serious. Gary, okay. And Judd says, this is the comedy interview program that talks serious about comedy. All right, that's the reading for today. And it's dated 1984. Should probably look up how old Judd Apatow was. But I'm pretty sure, you know, he's in high school. And he's interviewing Gary Shandling. Amazing, right? This is from Judd Apatow's book called Sick in the Head, Conversations About Life and Comedy. And he's got all these interviews, and they're dated. Let's see if the table of contents. Yeah, here we go. Adam Sandler, Albert, 2009. Albert Brooks, 2012. Amy Schumer, 2014. Chris Rock, 2014. Eddie Vedder, 2013. But some from the 80s, Harry Anderson, 1983. He's got Jim Carrey and Ben Stiller from 2010. Martin Short, 1984. Steve Allen, 1983. Dozens of these. So fascinating stuff. Having mentioned before in one of these dispatches, you know, stand-up comedy is amazing because it's just you and a person and a microphone in front of a crowd with lights on them. That's it. No special effects, no script, no cast, nothing. Just you and atmosphere. That's it. Sports-wise, it, you know, shares a lot of those traits with golf. It's just you and the golf course. No team, no coach, no timeouts, no playbook. I suppose you have a caddy if you're elite level walking with you. But it's just you and the course. No defense, no teammates. If it's a bad shot, it's your bad shot. If it's a bad joke, it's your bad joke. And it's interesting to hear Shandling, whom I love, in 1984, before the Gary Shandling Show, Larry Sanders, and all the rest exists. The next interview, which I may do tomorrow, though I may do other stuff tomorrow and come back to this later, is about the same length, and it's from 2014. So that'll be great, too. And I'll probably touch on some of these other comedians, Judd Apatow in general. Fantastic stuff. And I suppose only things to riff on a little bit are the idea of, you know, you're in Arizona, engineering major, marketing major, business, then business degree, going to graduate school, into creative writing, and have the temerity to take your material in front of George Carlin. He politely says he doesn't buy jokes from other people. He 100% only does his own material, but agrees to meet him the next night and give him feedback, which he does, and tells Gary, who's just a guy, like probably like an ad agency job or something, or maybe he's a grad student or both, yeah, I think you should go do this. I think you should give it a shot. So what does he do? He moves to Los Angeles and gives it a shot. And somebody stumbles. He stumbles into, oh, yeah, you know what you could try is just writing this. You know, if you don't know what to write, write a script. And on his own, he writes a script for an episode of All in the Family that gets denied. Well, then he writes one for Sanford and Son, and the people in charge of Sanford and Son somehow get a hold of it, like it, and start giving him work. And there you go. And he keeps doing comedy. It's amazing, too. Think about the discipline. He's saying, when he gets the call from the Tonight Show, which he had been preparing in the back of his mind, they told him, hey, someday we might come for you if something opens up, an opportunity opens up to guest host, which is like getting on the Tonight Show as a guest is everything to people in that profession. Getting to sit behind the table is otherworldly in terms of recognition and a sign from on high, from a kingmaker, that it's somebody worth listening to. That's why Apatow immediately asked what kind of offers started pouring in, because that's sort of how it happens. So Gary's just generally kind of preparing in his mind, doesn't know when it's going to happen, gets 24 hours notice, and his instinct is immediately to go out and get on a stage in front of anybody. He worked for months in a health club doing jokes for six people at a time who are just there eating on their, you know, killing, you know, just occupying their time before leaving, going on their way. And the comment that stands out, too, that's really cool is it had been a long time since he'd been in front of a crowd, 12 days. Like, that's how quickly it can start to atrophy. And it reminds me of from the Talent Code quoting, what's the pianist's name? Drawing a blank. But the idea of if he skips practice one day, he notices. If he skips practice 2 days in a row, his wife notices. And if he skips practice 3 days in a row, the entire world notices. The idea that these people that clearly come blessed with natural gifts in the providential or lucky lottery of life, or both, nonetheless, that's insufficient, completely insufficient. And they work their tails off. They outwork all of us. And so, for anything in our lives, regular people out here, not trying to get on the Tonight Show, to have something or to be like a legendary world-class pianist, to have something upon which we work that consistently and ruthlessly and relentlessly over time. And it's also, isn't it kind of interesting? It is to me that it takes the same kind of discipline and grit to, you know, shoot free throws as it does to play classical music, as it does to be funny. That even being funny isn't something that just happens. It's a craft that benefits from practice and sort of ruthless, relentless, deliberate focus. It's really cool. Maybe I'll read the other one tomorrow. It has lots of really fun stuff too that's inspiring. And we'll see where the week takes us. Hope you all had a good weekend. I am doing this over lunch. About to go finish lunch. The alarm went off at 4:50. I turned it off. I stayed up too late. I was reading and doing stuff. Some of it fruitful, some of it not. And I slept till about, I don't know, 6:15 or something. So I stayed up too late. If it happens again in the morning, no matter what, I'm going to get up when the alarm goes off, because then all I'm doing is engineering sleepiness, and I'll be tired enough to go to bed when I should. So just as a by the way for those who are paying attention to that little wrinkle, y'all be good. Talk with you tomorrow. Thanks.